music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We welcome a talented artist to the show who's inspired a legion of dancers to be the best they can be as she danced for artists like Bobby Brown, Belle Biv DeVoe, and Janet Jackson. Tish Oliver exudes love and passion in dance as well as in her focus on becoming an ER doctor, and we chat about her time on the dance floor with Janet and how she needs your help to accomplish her current goal of becoming a physician. We're also delighted to welcome jazz artist Emma Frank discussing her new album, The People We're Becoming, and being compared to the amazing Joni Mitchell. It's no secret that the Kelly Alexander Show is a huge supporter of the dance community, and so we are very happy to welcome someone who has inspired a nation of new dancers with her amazing ability and unique freestyle capabilities. Tish Oliver became a household name, especially if you were a fan of Janet Jackson back in the early 90s when she slammed home Tina Landon's choreography on such hit songs as That's the Way Love Goes, If, and You Want This. Tish is actually now in the process of becoming a doctor and is looking for your help to make her new dream come true. Tish, welcome to the show.
Oh my God, girl, you almost have me in tears. You know that, right? Yeah. I wasn't expecting it.
Well, we love to show love. And you're such a rock star, and I'm gonna gush right off the top because it really is a dream come true to have you on my show. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for even, you know, I mean, believing in me, and I'm glad I was that person for a lot of you guys. I love you guys so much. Kelly, girl, I can't wait to be done with school. I already told Kelly Kona that when I'm done with school, I'm coming out to Canada. So we gotta hit some house clubs to Punjabi, you know.
You are more than welcome in Canada, that is for sure. And we cannot wait to get you out, you know, booty shaking, that is for sure.
Okay, girl, I don't know if the booty's all shake. I think if I just stand in place, it'll just keep moving. You know, and not as tight as it was, people.
Well, we are so happy right now because we're fortunate to have so many fans of Janet Jackson on the show, which obviously means they are a huge fan of you because you danced with Janet for a while. So before we start, though, on I guess, reminiscing about your time with Janet, how did you actually get into the world of dance, and who did you work with before you started your career with Janet?
First of all, I didn't know that my career was going to take off like it did. I don't know, I guess everybody goes through things when they're in high school. You know, I grew up in South Central LA, and my mom wasn't educated, and it was just rough. It was hard. So for me, I think I was okay in middle school, high school, kind of in 11th, 12th grade. I think I was kind of feeling like, what am I going to do with my life? My friends were taking SATs. They were doing all these pre-calculus classes, and I was just like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any direction. So dancing was kind of like God's way of saying, well, let me help you out. And so I used to go to clubs. I used to battle. I wasn't into drugs or sleeping around. My thing was like, I just wanted to battle. I used to hitchhike from South Central LA to, you know, Hollywood to dance against guys at the time, because guys taught girls how to dance. And I was a tomboy, I still am. But, you know, they kind of taught you how to actually hit and pop and do all those things. So all you girls out there wearing the baggy clothes and you're learning how to dance, you're doing hip hop, that's how you do it, because that's how I learned it. So, but the flip side of that is when I started dancing with Janet and all the stuff, the choreography was all girly, it was sexy. Tina used to drill me, Tish, no, arms up, make sure this is pointed. And so, you know, she taught me how to be more feminine and all these different things. Because hip hop in the 90s, you guys know, it was all boyish and hip kicks and pops. And, you know, so I entered a dance contest when I was getting ready to get out of high school. And I had won a dance contest, and a part of the winnings was that you do your first major video, and that was with, it was Rich Nice. I danced with Fatima Robinson. Me and her were partners at the time, and it was like I danced with Rich Nice. His manager was friends with Belle Biv DeVoe. They were my first my tour that I went on, and then I went on tour with Bobby. I went on tour with, I did some stuff with LL Cool J. Queen Latifah. I don't know, just so many. I did a lot of the television shows.
Yeah.
Like, you remember
award shows?
Yeah, the dance shows, the award shows. I don't know. I just was able to dance with so many people, you guys, and it was like, and I don't know, it almost felt like God was looking out for me. And I really believe in that, that you guys got to, you know, follow that thing that's in you. And I'm sure, Kelly, you've had that, where that it's been that thing that said, okay, this is what you need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we ignore it because we let our ego get in there and say, no, we need to fix it, or we're controlling. Yeah. So, and I've noticed that when I started to go back to school and pursue the whole doctor thing, there's a side of me that felt like, because this is hard, man, this is way hard. This is totally different from going on tour and dance with all these people. Because I think there's a side of me that felt, God, you know, this is wonderful. But then at the same time, because I grew up poor, it was almost like, oh, I couldn't really just kind of breathe in all of the stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like in hindsight, now that I'm a student, I see all of that then, and I'm like, damn, why didn't I just kind of take advantage of all that? You know, like, you know, why didn't I, like, because at the time, you just kind of, I don't know how to explain it. You just, not a song, damn it, hits me in the head. You don't know what you have until it's gone.
Yeah.
So it's almost that, but then it wasn't that I was consciously doing it. I think it was subconsciously. I think I was thinking, you know, I love dancing. I love it. I mean, but I still do it like now. I will go out to a club and dance by a speaker and totally go off, you know. But at the same time, you know, you're dancing with people who wanted to be in the forefront. They wanted to be in front of the singer. You know what I mean? You're dancing with a lot of those egos. And if you don't have that ego, if you're not humble in a sense, or if you don't have a thick skin, it's hard to deal with. It's hard to be in it. Because it's most of the people are like that. Not all the people are like that. People that I was actually able to dance with and learn from, the Tina, the all these other people like Shanette and, oh my God, Omar, Cynthia Davila, you guys, just awesome people, awesome, trained, just really good people. And it was a real great experience. I can't even explain it, but it's been a very surreal, and I just got to say thanks for everything, my whole universe, how it worked out. And I'm just thankful that I was able to, in my heart, and I've got to get ready to cry. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm really not dramatic, you guys, but this is really deep for me. I was able to put the pain and the frustration and all that stuff that I was going through as a kid into dancing. And it was almost like I felt like I was praying to God. I was giving God this energy, and I was giving out love. So all the stuff you guys saw me, that all the dancing was me giving out, expressing love. So if I can help people with dancing, at the time I didn't think I could. You know, at the time I looked at people that were doctors. So I never really was a fan of entertainers, and I know that sounds crazy. It just never was that, because I used to think doctors were cool. I used to think that, you know, helping people that, you know, save someone's life, I never thought that what I was doing was just as important. You know what I'm saying? So and then meeting Janet and knowing that not everybody in the entertainment business are superficial or fake or any of these things. So when I met Janet and she was real, she went down to the hood, to my crazy looking house in the inner city and all these different things, and she was a real friend, you guys. It was like, wow, man, these people, I mean, it was a blessing. That's all I can tell you. Like, she is real. She's a really good person, and I'm really happy and thankful that I was actually able to be friends with her and work with her and continue that friendship. Because, you know, a lot of times our friends come and go, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so it's a good thing to meet people that are humble, you know? So I think I went through all over the place. But sorry.
That's fine. We'll get you back on track. Can you actually then set the record straight? Because I think you kind of have, but I just, you know, for people once and for all, because I don't think a lot of people have actually heard, you know, this come from Tish Oliver's mouth. But are you actually, you know, one of those girls that Janet mentioned in her interviews back in the day around Poetic Justice, that she met some girls and pulled from their experiences to that role of justice?
Yeah. I did her braids for, I didn't do her braids for Poetic Justice. Let me take that back. I think Joe did her braids. I don't know who did our braids for Poetic Justice. I did her braids for You Want This. that was that. But yeah, we met her. I met her because when I was on tour, but we came off tour, me and, I'm sorry, Fatima and I. We were on the road with Fatima, Josie, Les, Sky, Big Les. I used to dance with all these people. So I met Fatima met John Singleton. And Fatima and I, because we were partners back in the day, we used to choreograph and do all that stuff together, met Janet through John Singleton because Fatima knew him. So we all were friends. Fatima was actually going to go on a road with Janet. Like, we're all going to go on a road. But she, it didn't work out. And now Fatima did her thing. She started doing choreography. You know what I'm saying? So it's like everybody started, you know, it was like I went on a road with Janet. But I met her from that, from the Boys in the Hood movie. Yeah, okay. I did.
Okay, so that's where, yeah, where you first met Janet.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how did your friendship sort of get going then? And did you end up having to audition for the Janet tour?
No, I didn't. I didn't have to audition for her. I think, I don't know how, we just, we really started to hang out and just kind of like, I don't know. And I, you know, I would still try to, I would still work. I would still do my thing. Like I would go up to her house and hang out and stuff, but I still had, you know, stuff I had to deal with my mom and help her out and stuff like that. So I don't know how we end up just, we all became friends and she and I became even closer. Just, I don't know. I think just because, you know, some people you just click with and you go through that. Is this person my friend because they're my friend, or is this person my friend because they want something from me? You know, so, and I'm, you know, I'm sure she had to do that whole thing with me or with everybody. I mean, if you're that large, that famous, that all those things, you gotta set boundaries because you gotta make sure someone is your friend and your friend and not somebody who's trying to get over with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and you embrace that. I think everybody should have that with whoever they have, because when you're giving love and you're giving, you know, loyalty and all that to anybody, you want to guard that because not everybody deserves that, because people take it for granted and they take advantage of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
now I wanted to ask you, when you were in that moment of you know, being part of the Janet tour and the Janet videos, you know, everybody remembers those videos, especially you, obviously, at the beginning of That's the Way Love Goes. Now I know, mm-hmm, you guys were sort of in a bubble, I'm sure, like, you know, you were this tight group, but did you have any idea how special, you know, that group of people were at that time, like all of you dancers, because you guys are kind of known as like the OGs, like the original kids, you know, you and,
well,
and
I think, you know, I used to, yeah, it's like everybody, it's like having family, it's like having brothers and sisters and getting to know each other, getting to know the perks of everybody, you know what I'm saying? And gelling well, you know, and we did, we had that. I mean, I danced with a lot of people, and what I really liked about Janet is that she connected. Now, I don't know if she connected with any other group outside of that us in the 90s. I doubt it, but she really had that. She was like, you know, these people are her friends, and we hung out. We did stuff. We talked about everything. We cried. We went, you know, it's the same thing, but it's just that, I don't know how to say this without, I don't want it to sound like I'm being ungrateful or any of these things, but it's, God, how do I say this? It's just, it's real. I don't know. It's as real as you can get. You know what I mean? When you, and like I said, I think that it's harder for somebody to be humble when they have so much. And when you meet somebody who's humble, it's like, wow, thank you.
That's,
you
amazing.
Know, thank you. Because not a lot of, I mean, even people who don't have a lot and they're already like acting like they do, it's like, wow, really? Seriously? Mm-hmm. You know?
Can you walk us through what it was like being in rehearsal with Janet and the other kids for the videos and the tour? Because I don't know if you remember, but back around that time, you know, when the Janet album came out, Janet actually released a behind the scenes video, and we got to see sort of like these behind the scenes of you guys practicing for If and you know, You Want This and all that stuff. And to us, it looked like it was so much fun, even though I know you guys were working really hard. But what was it like being, you know, in rehearsal in those days?
Oh, God, you're having me talk about that stuff when I'm like a student now, so.
I'm making you work, Tish.
Look at me. It was heaven, girl. No, it was heaven. No, it was great. I mean, it was great because I'm silly. I'm silly. I'm empathetic, compassionate, silly. I'm, you know, I can be serious, but for the most part, I'm like upbeat. you know. Mm-hmm. So when we're on in practicing and stuff, we would act silly all the time. We'll act goofy, and then we'll hit the routine, and then we're like, okay, get a break. You know, I would eat a lot. I was like, I would have to eat, so I would take a break to eat, and then, you know, so it was just fun. Everybody was working together. It was like if my arm was off, I had, you know, Kelly say, oh, Tisha, do it this way. Or I would sit down and see Tina and them do it. They would do if, the part where they do the break and stuff. Like, I would see them do if, part of the if routine, and I would look at it. Because, again, you know, my background is hip-hop, you know, battling. So I would really have to look at some of the more trained dancing, you know, routines and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and they were really helpful. Like, they didn't have an ego. They didn't have this condescending. It wasn't any of that. And I mean, it was awesome. And you almost wish you can take that energy into, you know, corporate America.
No, it's true.
I mean, you kind of wish you could just take that into, you know, the ER. You know? I'm sorry.
Man, that would be good. Now, you mentioned the choreography, and we've mentioned before, like, you're an amazing freestyle dancer. Everybody knows that, you know, that's been said about you. Tina, actually, I'm going to talk to you a little bit later, because Tina said something about you in a recent interview and you know, said that what an amazing freestyle dancer you are. Was it challenging to learn Tina's choreography and work as a unit, or did you embrace that challenge?
I embraced it because I'm a little kind of, I don't like to give up on anything. And also at the same time, I didn't want to feel like, okay, so you have all these people that's auditioning, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here, and again, I'm not seeing what you guys are seeing back then. I'm not even now. I'm like, God, I'm really thankful for what you're saying. But I didn't see all of that stuff. It was almost like I was in a big dream. I was sleepwalking, and it was a wonderful thing. Like, I went to a club, danced, and all of a sudden, my career started. Like, literally, there was no, this is where I'm going to be. I'm going to be a professional dancer. I want to get into choreography. It just happened. So when all this stuff is going on, I'm dancing with Janet. I'm seeing all these people audition for her and all these. And so I felt like I have to do good just because I didn't audition. Maybe I took someone's spot. And I always didn't want to feel like I'm taking any of this for granted. You understand what I'm saying? So even if it was hard, oh, well, let me take my foot up. If I hurt my leg, let me fix it because I got to get this. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had Tina tell me, Tish, you're good. You got this. So you wouldn't be here if you didn't know how to do autography. You wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. And that meant so much to me. You know, like, it was hard because you feel like, you know, I see people that are trained and they're dancing, you know, when it gets your soul and you start crying because you're like, God, that's so cool. You know, that they feel the music. They feel the dancing. They're not dancing for me. They're not dancing for anybody on it. They are dancing for them, and you can see it. So when I would learn the choreography, I was like, I got to get this because, you know, this is a blessing that I'm even here, that I'm learning this, that I'm able actually to do this. So I got to get this. And I don't want to make everybody that is dancing with me on stage look a hot mess because I ran into them because I couldn't do a turn well.
Right.
You know, it was hard, but it was like something you want to do. So of course, you know, things that you're passionate about doing, you do what you got to do to make it happen, make it work, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was hard. It wasn't easy. No, it wasn't easy.
Joining us on the show is dancer and current med student Tish Oliver, who used to dance with Janet Jackson. Now, some people may not know this, but I think true Janet fans do, that Jennifer Lopez was actually a part of that Janet project, but then she left, obviously, because her career started to take off. What was it like dancing with her, and was it an easy transition when Kelly Kono, you know, came in to take her place, and that sort of rounded out that kid group?
We did That's the Way Love Goes. And that was, we rehearsed together. She was nice. She was nice. But I think I didn't really have that much interaction with Jennifer.
Now,
so I don't really, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think she did Fly Girls and stuff like that. So, you know, we were rehearsed and stuff. And she was nice. She wasn't mean or, you know, any of that stuff. But I'm just saying, like, it was the beginning. So when Kelly came in, that's when we all just started kind of, you know, fusing together better. You know, we were kind of like, I don't know. It was a good fit. Because you got to remember, Jennifer was going into acting and stuff. So her whole thing was not in the whole going on tour. So, you know, I guess it's just different what people's mindset is, you know?
Right,
so,
right. when you are dancing, again, it's just the things light up. It's like fireworks going off. And I want to know from your standpoint, what is your favorite or what was your favorite, you know, Janet song to dance to when you were on tour or doing the videos?
Kelly, I mean, drum and bass, house, that's in my blood, reggaeton, some bossa nova, like, so I'm like, you know, I'm like United Nations in my soul somewhat, so, so when Throb came on, I didn't even know what to do. I was like, oh my God, Throb, yes.
Nice.
I liked If, I loved If, because that was, you know, the girly stuff, so I was like, ooh, hot, a little fast being on stage, you know, mm-hmm. like, so I loved If. I love That's the Way Love Goes. Those are my favorite. And then the other one was more theatrical, you know. I like Rhythm Nation. Rhythm Nation, oh my God, that was hard for me to learn because it was all that. It was almost like, I like to say this to Kelly or Tina, but you know how the new hip hop is out now where they're doing a lot of the intricate arm stuff mm-hmm. and all that stuff. A lot of, what is it called? The guys. What's the name of the guys? The group of the guys, Wallaboos, or what are they called?
Oh, Jabberwockies, those guys? No?
Yeah. Okay. And I apologize, Jabberwockies, for saying your name wrong. But the guys, yeah. So you know a lot of that, when they do the intricate hand stuff and the ticking kind of thing, I almost think when I was learning Rhythm Nation with the hands and all that stuff, because I was like, oh my God, I don't see how my arm is, you know? So every time I would do that routine, I was like, I don't feel like my arm's straight. I don't feel like so I was like, that's pre-Jabberwockies people, okay? Tina had it already, our people.
We have to tell Tina that. We have to tell Tina that she was the original Jabberwocky.
Yeah, she was. So that routine, I was like, oh my God. She was like, just put your arm up. I was like, they can't see me back here.
That's so awesome. You have to tell us, because, you know, I think one of the performances from that era that sticks out for any Janet fan is the Saturday Night Live Throb performance. Did you guys have as much fun as we thought you were having on stage at SNL that
night? Oh, my God, yes. And Shinette little hot butt tipping in on the stage. I can see her now with her little, like... We loved it. Oh my God. Because we're all like, you know, a lot of times we'll go to shows and then we'll go out to a club. Like, I would love to go to the house club. So after the shows, a lot of us will go out dancing. So, you know, because again, I'm a club kid. So for me, dancing on stage is like still dancing, you know, in the club by the speaker, just going off. Like, you know what I mean? So for me, it was like, oh, yes, you know, and yeah, we all have fun. Oh yeah, that was a good show. That was a fun show.
Now, can you describe or give me the difference between how Janet is as a boss versus how Janet is as a friend? Is there a big difference? Like, because again, I know you said you had so much fun, and we saw in the behind the scenes videos that, you know, you guys were carrying on. Does she ever have to put her foot down and to get you guys sort of in order?
No. Because because we all were ready. We're ready to dance. It wasn't any of that stuff. It wasn't any of the cattiness. It wasn't any of that, okay, come on, you guys, go full out. Come on. We were like, yes, let's do this. You know what I mean? It was never that. Okay. It was never that. And she, it was almost like even her being the boss, it was almost like being a good leader where people want to be, you know, be led by you, want to do things because they like the person, you know what I'm saying? So if you ever worked in an organization and that person made you feel like a human being mm-hmm. and they made you feel like a team and a family. So of course you want to make your sister, your brother, your friend proud and your boss proud because this reflects all of us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And she always made us feel like she appreciated our gifts and our talents. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it was never like, oh, these people are in the background.
Right. Right.
You know, it was never any of that. I mean, yeah, it was a very good experience. And it's, that kind of stuff spoils you because then you expect that when you go to a regular 9-to-5. You know?
Right. It's true. I remember Kelly Kono telling me once that after working with Janet, that it was difficult or challenging when she worked with some other artists because they just didn't measure up. Not that they weren't great, but she's like, I'm paraphrasing here, but she was like, you know, there's only one Janet.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, honestly, yeah, no, no. If Boob wanted me to dance for her right now, that would probably be the only person she would be the only person I would do it for. Because it's not the same. Like I said, you want to feel like someone appreciates you and that they treat you like a human being. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that. You don't have that with a lot of people. You know, and like I said, for her fame, and her brother's like that too. Michael was like same thing. Nice, humble dude.
That's amazing.
And cool. You know?
Can you take us back, like if you go into the recesses of your mind and sort of go back to the time when you were on tour and you know, going all around the world? Because you guys were on tour for a long time with the Janet Tour. It was like, 18 months or something?
Yes.
What was it like being on tour, you know, because I think so many people wonder what that life is like. Like, is it, do you enjoy yourself? Are you jet lagged all the time?
Okay. Well, Kelly, let's look at it differently. Okay. Because some people, you won't be able to stay at a Four Seasons. Yeah, right. You know, Janet's four of us. So, you know, it's like either you have Four Seasons or you're dancing with other people and you're at a Motel 6. Yeah.
So it was good. It was good.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, damn, there's a bad bug that's on the stage with us. Come on, really? You know, it's pretty bad. We had a rehearsal in Hawaii.
Wow. That's pretty nice.
You know, I mean, like, I went to this nice resort in, in Arizona or Tucson, Arizona. It was really nice. She took all of us there. Like, that's just unheard of. You know, people don't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much money they have. They just don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, you get up. It's, I don't know. Like, if you love your job, you love what you do. It's never one of those things like, oh God, I got to get up here and do this again.
Right. Right. Okay.
My only thing, there was parts with me where I was difficult. It was almost like when I felt like, oh my God, I'm being pampered. I'm not used to this. We had a massage therapist. We had a makeup artist that would put makeup on me. And I'm natural. I'm a little hippie. So I have makeup on. And sometimes I didn't want to wear it some nights because I'm like, oh my God, let me just get out there and dance, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to some auditions, they want you to smile. And I'm, you know, hip hop back in the day, if you didn't have an ugly face, you weren't hitting it. You know what I mean?
It's true.
You know, if you can look like you have to go to the bathroom, you're like, okay, she's not hitting them. Things need to go sit down. You know what I mean? So,
oh my God, that's so awesome. So then,
you know what I mean?
So then conversely that I have to ask you, was it, because I remember interviewing Tina, not in our last interview, but one or the time before, I think it was, or the one before that, where I asked her, you know, what it was like when you guys would wrap up tour. Like, was it challenging to sort of get back to normal life? And did you miss being part of that group?
I did. I missed the girls, but I've always been in and out of working in the hospital or doing dancing. And I think that's just because I had that survival thing. I couldn't really look at what I was having in front of me because I was always worried about how am I going to pay this bill or help my mom with this. Okay. So again, remember I was telling you, I never really kind of appreciated that time that I was doing it. It was almost like I wouldn't spend money. I didn't take pictures when I would be in Europe because I was like, okay, I got to save money. I can't. I remember Janet telling me, girl, you need to buy yourself something nice.
Wow.
When we're in, I don't know, Switzerland, she's like, well, you need to get yourself something, treat yourself. And I got a Tag watch, and I was like, oh my God, I'm such a snob, you know. And I never wore it. I was just like, oh, I can't. I just, you just don't, you feel kind of, like for me, I felt kind of guilty because I knew I wanted to buy a place. I wanted to do things. I wanted to help my mom and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. It was never, I think the hardest thing has been for me, being a med student. That's been the most difficult thing in my whole life.
Okay.
And it made me feel like, because I just didn't stop dancing. What I did was I got married and went through a bad divorce and all those different things, and I had to reinvent myself in my 30s. And so I decided, let me go back to school and be a physician.
Okay.
Because once you do things like dancing, which is your love, your heart, it's a whole different thing. And then when I was growing up, I always thought dancing, acting, and medicine. But because I didn't have anybody to kind of be a mentor for me, it was almost like God said, I'm going to put you in dancing. So I started dancing, but I never went back to get trained. I never did all that stuff because at the time I was thinking, okay, I need to, while I have this money, get this place. So then you're stuck in a mortgage.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, how am I going to pay this mortgage? Now I got to get my regular job. I'll go on auditions, but what if I don't get that audition? So you all of a sudden start getting into this whirlwind of worry and all of that stuff. So you never really appreciate the things that's right there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think, like I said, getting off tour wasn't really so difficult for me because I've always had regular jobs in and out of dancing. I looked at dancing as my career, mm-hmm. working in a hospital, being a phlebotomist, doing all that kind of stuff as a gig. So when I would come across administration that was really rude and all these different things and how they treated other coworkers and stuff like that, I was like, Miss Thing, this is a gig. Okay, I need to not do this one. We're going to go back into do my audition tomorrow. So, you know, so it was never really like, God, people have to deal with this. They have to deal with, you know, bosses that are bullies or coworkers that are just bitter. And I would go into the healthcare field just happy. Like, I'm helping someone. I'm doing things. And I looked at it like, trying to bring in that dancing, that energy, that love for just that life, because I had that with dancing, into that health field. And that was one of the things that's been difficult.
Okay.
Because it's not the other side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, people, you know, in the entertainment business, they all, you know, dancers too, they complain about stuff, but it's just different. It's a different thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing what they love. And so when you're in a field where people are working because they just have to do it and it's not what they love, then a lot of times you're dealing with those personalities where they're just not happy.
Right, right.
You know,
now,
so, go ahead.
No, now I want to get to talk about your medical school. I just have one more question with regards to sort of that time period, because we recently had Tina Landon on the show talking about the 20th anniversary of Scream. Can't believe it's been 20 years since Michael and Janet, you know, released that song in the video. But Tina actually brought you up in the interview because she said, and I didn't know this, I thought I was pretty much schooled on Scream history, but didn't know that she had brought you in to sort of freestyle and sort of help them, I guess, try to figure some moves out, her and Sean Cheeseman. What was it like to be brought into that? Because Scream is such a prolific video to this day. Everybody knows, you know, Michael and Janet Scream. So what was it like being a part of that process?
God, I'm in this, like, all wonderful people. I'm doing what I love. I'm dancing. I'm freestyling. I'm hearing the beats. I'm seeing Michael do his little pop, pop, pop. And we're just grooving. So I'm not... Again, I'm not looking at these momentous moments mm-hmm. as, I'm just looking at it like we're all hanging out and I'm enjoying it. You understand what I'm saying? Like, and it is major. It's major, but I'm not seeing it. I'm just looking at it like I'm just hanging out and helping Tina and Sean. Like, whatever, let's do it.
Right.
You know, like if you see something, you know, like, and that's what it was like. It was never like a... I don't know. I think it was fluid. It just did what it was supposed to do. You know, my whole dancing career just did what it was supposed to do. And I was able to enjoy meeting different people and their personalities. And the fact that Tina had me come in there, yeah, there was a side of me that felt like, damn, she asked me to come. Are you kidding me? Really? Shut up, Tina Shadow. You know, you know, like, girl, stop playing with me, girl. No. Is it going to be food there? No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was just, you know, God, Tina, man, I can't even believe you said that about me. But yeah, I love dancing. And if I can help out any way with that, and, you know, hopefully I can be just as good as a physician, I love it. So. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but it was all amazing, you know?
Okay.
It was amazing.
Very cool. Now, we have to talk about this medical career because this is awesome to me.
Oh,
I can't believe we've got a dancer going to be is a med student, because to me it's not that I think, you know, one can't go with the other, but it seems like you're going from this very, very creative, you know, way of life to got to handle math and science and whatever else they're throwing at you. So, how did you decide that you wanted to go back to med school or go to med school?
Well, okay, so, you know, we all have things in our lives that kind of push us to do certain things. So, Everyone has insecurities. One of mine was probably not feeling like I was smart enough. My mom didn't finish high school. I didn't have a lot of people around me that were educated. Not saying that they were, you know, not saying that you need a college education to be intelligent. I'm not saying that. But for me, I felt like I was on tour and I danced and I was doing all these things, but I felt like I needed to get that education. I felt like at the time I needed to go back to school and get my degree, right? It wasn't until I was in school that I realized, oh, people are smart and they just read a book. No, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, I went through all this for what? Really, God? Seriously? You know, so I had gotten my bachelor's degree at a chiropractor college, and I was going to be a chiropractor at first, but then I got worried about how much money I had to pay, and then I decided to go and apply to medical school and got accepted to two medical schools in the Caribbean. So I ended up going to medical school in the Caribbean. Like I said, when I was a kid, I wanted to either be an actress, dancer, and I liked medicine. So, and I know it's totally different from dancing. It's totally different from even my personality. You know, a lot of my classmates are uptight, kind of, not all of them, mm-hmm. but most of them. And not all doctors are that way. So I'm not trying to, you know, degrade people in the profession. But for a lot of times, you're dealing with life or death. So a lot of times, if you aren't, you know, a certain way, sometimes people think that maybe you don't know. You know what I mean? Like if you're very open and childlike in a sense that you're funny and silly and stuff like that, people may second guess your ability and they may think you're not intelligent. So my eventual goal is to open up a care facility and open up clinics and stuff like that. And I know that the kind of personality I have to have that degree so I won't have to deal with people not taking me serious. So I went back to med school because I knew that I want to learn medicine because I don't want to just, you can say, okay, you can just be a business person and open up your own clinic. But I want to be physically the doctor helping people too because I like that. I like that one-on-one patient care kind of thing. And I love it. I love that. So I ended up going to medical school in the Caribbean. And unfortunately, the one that I went to doesn't have loans. So that's why I'm asking for everybody to help with whatever you guys can help with, because I'm on my last year and it's been really difficult trying to do it. And I work and I have kids by myself and I'm doing a master's program too. So it's been hard. It's been really hard. And like I said, this has been the hardest thing that I've done in my whole life. This is way harder than dancing. Mm-hmm. This is way harder than growing up in an inner city for me, school and trying to get the information so that I can even compete with other medical students to get a residency. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult because if I'm trying to study for my boards and I'm doing a paper for my master's program and I'm working two jobs, it's kind of like, am I going to even do well on my boards? So that's why I did the GoFund thing, because I'm at my last of it all right now. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I got a year left in med school. And then I'm going to apply to residency. I hope I can be an emergency room doctor. So that's where I'm at right now. You know, I work 14 days a month and then the rest I'm teaching dance or doing something wonderful in dance world. So,
So it's important then right now, because I want to make sure it's really clear to the amazing people that are listening to the show. And we're so fortunate here on the Kelly Alexander Show to have so many, again, Janet Jackson fans that follow the show and appreciate the show. And that's why it was really important for me when I found out that you have this GoFundMe campaign. You know, I wanted to get you on the show because I think that you, you know, Tish Oliver, have been such an inspiration to so many of us. Like I said, when I was, you know, younger and saw you guys doing what you did on the Janet tour, it helped inspire me to, you know, keep going for my goals. And so if we can help you achieve this amazing goal of becoming a doctor that's going to help people, I think that's, you know, a wonderful thing. So to help Tish, it's very simple. You can go to her Facebook page and she mm-hmm. will have a link there for her GoFundMe campaign. And how do people find you on Facebook, Tish? I think it's your full name, right? Letitia Oliver. People can befriend you.
Yeah, it's Letitia Oliver, and I have my two kids on there, so you can see them.
Very cute.
It's Letitia Oliver, and I don't know if it's under Atlanta or Los Angeles. I think it could be still under Palm Desert or Los Angeles, California. Okay. But it's, I can kind of maybe, I don't know, I can give you guys a GoFundMe mm-hmm. Link. You think that'll work?
You tell me.
See if it is. Kelly, see if it will show up. I'm going to give you the GoFundMe, and I think it's a slash 6QPIH, and I think it's a zero.
Okay. And also what we're going to do is here on my show, we're going to paste the GoFundMe link on our Facebook page, which is Kelly Alexander Show. So you just go facebook.com/Kelly Alexander Show and you will see the link to go and help Tish. Like anything you can do to help her is much appreciated.
Yeah, you guys, anything. I take food stamps. I mean, whatever. I'm sorry.
But I just think this is so. I think this is such a wonderful idea, and you know, again, you've brought so much joy to all of us that it's the least that we can do. I think to put this out there and you know, ask the universe for some help. So we want you to be this doctor. Yeah. We know that you're going to be amazing because you have such passion. You had such passion, you know, dancing for Janet back in the day, and obviously you still have that passion in you now for this new career. So we wish you so much luck with that.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Thank you. I'm giving you hugs, girl.
I appreciate that. And you promise you're going to come back on the show anytime I bug you. Is that cool?
No, yes, girl, please. Yes. Okay, yes.
Okay, very good. Well, that is, again, Tish Oliver, an amazing dancer, and now she's a med student. And again, you can check out her GoFundMe campaign, which is going to be on her Facebook page, so facebook.com/Letitia Oliver. And again, you can find it on our Facebook as well, facebook.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Tish, thank you for this.
Oh, thank you, baby. Thank you. Bye, you guys. Love you guys. Keep it going. Keep it moving.
Awesome. Again, that is Tish Oliver right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Twitter at @KAlexanderShow.
We're very happy to welcome an artist who is taking her career to a new level with the release of her sophomore album, The People We're Becoming. Montreal jazz artist Emma Frank has been receiving lofty praise, including being compared to a young Joni Mitchell, as well as having her voice described as leather on silk. Emma, thank you for spending time with us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks. Hi, Kelly.
So we're so happy to have you on the show, and I have to start by asking how your musical journey began.
Oh, that's a good question. I started singing when I was really little. My mom sang around the house, and I think I was about three, like around the time that I was talking and making full sentences, I was also singing a lot.
Awesome. And were you drawn to jazz like fairly quickly in life, or did it take a while to get there?
You know, I didn't realize that I was drawn to jazz. I didn't know that that's what it was called. I'm an only child, so I grew up around the music that my mom was listening to, and she would sing, you know, American songbook standards, Gershwin, Cole Porter, around the house, as well as musical theater stuff and spirituals and Motown. So I grew up listening to Ella Fitzgerald, listening to Nina Simone, listening to vocalists that are classified as jazz, and just feeling like there was this spontaneity in their delivery that was incredible and made me feel so excited.
Do you find that any of those artists have seeped into what you do as a musician?
Oh, inevitably. I mean, I'm not about to compare myself to Nina Simone. That's crazy. she's a goddess in my mind. But I mean, I think any music that you listen to a lot becomes part of you and speaks through what you do one way or another.
How would you describe the type of jazz that you produce? Because obviously jazz is a very, you know, broad label because there's so many different styles.
I'm a songwriter. I'm a singer-songwriter. So there are some other vocalists coming out nowadays that you're not sure whether to call them R&B or folk or jazz. There's improvisation. There are solos. But there's still songs at the core.
Mm-hmm. So do you end up writing all your own lyrics then, Emma?
I do, yeah.
And how do you actually go about the process of writing, especially because, you know, I often get to speak to a lot of singer-songwriters, I guess that would be in that sort of folk pop vein, you know, and they always sort of say that they lean towards writing with the guitar or writing with the piano, but I've never really sort of got a good sense of how jazz artists record or get ideas, you know, when they're writing lyrically. Do you head to the piano or is there other instruments that sort of seep into your mind first?
Well, when I work with an instrument, I work with piano. And it's really, I don't know how to play guitar, so
okay.
I have to use piano, although I love how guitar sounds. But I don't always work with an instrument first. Sometimes I want to, there are a lot of different entry points for where I'll start working on a song. And sometimes I'll just hear a melody with words connected to it, and I want to develop that away from any instrument so that my ear is really sure of itself before I start filling in harmony and other things. So sometimes I start just vocally. Sometimes I start sitting at the piano saying, oh, I really like these changes. I hear a melody over it, and this is sort of what I'm feeling. And then words and melody usually come at the same time for me.
When you are writing, is writing a song sort of a lofty process, or does it sort of, you know, come about fairly easily for you?
Totally depends. Sometimes it comes about easily, and that's a great feeling. And other times it's like pulling teeth. And I ask myself, oh, do I even know how to do this? What am I doing with my life? and then other days, you know, there's a sense of affirmation. Oh, I can do this. I like what I'm writing. This makes sense. So it depends.
And, you know, it's funny. I think it was Elton John that said once that when he's writing a song, I know that obviously he has Bernie that I think writes all the lyrics for him, but when he's sort of developing stuff, he says if he can't sort of feel it within 10 minutes, he gives up on it. Do you have a time length or a time frame where you're like, this is like too much of a tooth pull? Like, I think I need to leave this one alone.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing, that when something's not feeling authentic, when the story doesn't make sense, when you're not sure if you actually feel it, that you just walk away. There are totally ideas that I've walked away from that I've come back to. And I said, you know what? I guess I was just in a bad mood that day because I think this is really cool. But often, you know, if I am spending hours and hours trying to make a verse work and then I walk away from it, sometimes I realize, oh, it just doesn't work because it's not true.
Okay. Joining us on the show is Montreal jazz artist Emma Frank. Make sure to check out her website, emmafrankmusic.com. I've always wanted to ask this again, because when I speak to the singer-songwriters that are in that folk pop vein, you know, again, I think everything sort of stems around that piano or guitar sound. But obviously with jazz, you've got a lot of other things going on with regards to the horn section. So, you know, do you have a horn that really sort of speaks to you? Like, do you go to the trumpet? Do you love the saxophone? Like, I just think that there's so many rich elements to horn sections in jazz music.
Well, yeah, we don't have a horn section. I just have a trumpet player in my band, Simon Millard, and I love his sound. Often when I think about different instruments, once in a while I think, oh my gosh, I could really hear harp on this, or I could really hear xylophone on this. But a lot of times I think, oh, I could really hear my friend so-and-so on this. I love his energy. I love his sound, or I love her sound specifically. So that I'm often not so much thinking about instrumental timbre or texture as much as personal timbre, texture, energy. So Simon Miller, the trumpet player, is also my partner, my boyfriend, my partner in crime musically. And I just love playing with him. I couldn't imagine just kind of throwing another horn on some of these songs, because his sound is so, it's not trumpet specifically, it's the way he plays it that really moves me.
What was the process like this time around putting together your second album, The People We're Becoming?
Different than the last one, a bit more collaborative, arrangement wise. I was working with Simon on a few of the arrangements, and I was a lot more grounded in the musical community in Montreal while I was working on the song. So I felt like I maybe had a little bit more of a framework and an ability to let the compositions breathe and grow, and to experiment with them with musicians and to see where that went, how they evolved by playing them live before recording them.
Now, you mentioned Montreal, and I have to ask about that. We have a lot of listeners that not only listen from Montreal, but across Canada and some of the states. And actually, we have some radio stations over in Australia and Japan and even in England that are listening right now. So, you know, I think a lot of people know that Montreal has this massive jazz fest, you know, each and every June, and it gets, you know, worldwide attention. How do you feel that the Montreal jazz scene is really doing? Because obviously that festival brings in a lot of people from other places. So how do you think Montreal is doing as a jazz scene? And is there somewhere else in the world that you would like to maybe go and reside in, because that scene is doing, you know, amazing things?
The Montreal jazz scene, it's another kind of broad term. There are a lot of amazing musicians here, and they're doing so many different things. So you have people that do play jazz, and that might mean that they do free improvisation. It might mean that they're actually playing standards. And it might mean that they also have an indie rock band, and then sometimes they do an all improv show, and sometimes they do a pop show. So what I find particularly energizing about Montreal is the fact that everybody is drawing from so many different influences. And so I find that the musicians that I work with here are really able to embrace their unique voice and to find avenues to express their unique voice and set of influences. But I really admire that. I mean, there's kind of a lot of jazz going on in Sweden, Iceland, Netherlands, that whole area that appeals to me sonically. There's kind of an ethereal woodland elfy quality that I find myself really drawn to. And there's a whole scene of musicians, obviously in New York City, that I listen to and I, you know, in utter admiration. I'm like, oh my God, I just want to hang out with these people. I love what they're making. So, you know, in a dream land, I imagine myself like best friends with all of the people that I admire the most. But I like the idea that we reside in the place where we have roots, you know, that we don't, I'm not just going to call the person that I think is the best trumpet player in the whole wide world or the person that is the most famous piano player in the whole wide world, that you work with people that you have connections with, that you've built a history with, you've built a rapport with, and that's really what comes through in the music is friendship and love and community. And that's been a really powerful learning experience with this album is how friendship and relationships and sharing experiences can positively influence the music.
If I could actually take that idea a little bit further, because a question that I had sort of written down before with regards to the quartet that you're playing with. Now, obviously, you mentioned that Simon is your partner in a lot of different areas. With the other musicians that play with you, can you imagine playing with anyone else right now? Or, you know, are they your dudes?
Oh, well, they're my dudes, and I can imagine playing with other people. You know, like, music is a universal language, and it's a beautiful thing to share with a lot of people, and beautiful to get inspired by playing with other musicians. E.C. Giraldo, the piano player in my band, is a longtime friend and one of my best friends in the world, and it's amazing to play with her. All of the people in my band are really great friends and have brought such a specific, wonderful sound to the music. And so for this specific music, I'm really glad that I'm working with them, but I'm also really into collaborating with other people.
How would you, characterize your new album, The People We're Becoming? Have you seen a big jump in your growth as an artist?
I would say that my process, my practice really evolved during the writing of this album. Became a lot more focused, a lot more clarity in the work I was doing and why I was doing it. And I feel like I took some risks that I hadn't known I could take. And I grew musically and spiritually and emotionally while doing it, for sure.
Now that the album is actually out, you know, what are some of the upcoming goals over the next couple of months?
I want people to hear it.
Very good.
And the goal is to play as much as possible. Right now we're scheduled to play the Montreal Jazz Fest, the Toronto Jazz Festival. We're going to be playing the Festival d'Été in Quebec City. And the goal is to just expand from there.
Fantastic. Well, Emma, thank you so much for spending time with us, and you're always welcome back on the show.
Thanks so much, Kelly. Lots of fun.
That's Montreal jazz artist Emma Frank. Make sure to check out her website, emmafrankmusic.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week. And a big thank you going out to my two guests, Tish Oliver and Emma Frank. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Leah LaBelle. Work hard for what you want, because it won't come to you without a fight. You have to be strong and courageous and know that you can do anything you put your mind to. If somebody puts you down or criticizes you, just keep on believing in yourself and turn it into something positive. We'd love for you to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at Kay Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show, which features all of our interviews. Have an amazing week. If you've got any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I will chat soon.